This episode of the Disney Dish Podcast is sponsored by touringplans.com, where you can find trip planning tools and advice for Walt Disney World, Disneyland, and Universal Studios Orlando. Disney Dish listeners can subscribe with discount code DISH2013, that's DISH2013, to get 25% off a one-year subscription to touringplans.com. Check it out as soon as you're done listening. Thanks! All right, welcome back for another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It is I, Len Testa, and after a monkey-filled morning, Jim and I are here to talk about Disney stuff. And today we're going to talk about Star Wars Land, the rumored Star Wars Land for Disney's Hollywood Studios. But in order to do the rumors, we need to bring in Jim. So I'd like to welcome Jim to the show. Jim, how's it going?
After a full morning of braciating, I'm ready to sit and talk.
So Jim and I, along with our significant others, went and saw lemurs. In North Carolina earlier today, it was a lot of fun.
Lots and lots of lemurs.
Lemurs, yeah, they are amazingly not edible. But anyway, so speaking of not edible, Jim, let's talk about Star Wars Land. So there's the rumor that's been floating around, and this I guess has come about a couple of different ways. But originally, it started off with a survey that Disney sent off, mysterious survey, like about 6 months ago, that said, please rate your interest in the following intellectual properties, and it was like, you know, Captain Crunch, a can of Barbie and Ken fame, and then, you know, like Star Wars and Transformers, and no mention of Avatar, I think, was the other big thing about it. And from that, you started to hear after that, like, maybe there was something to this Star Wars rumor. So walk us through, after Disney bought it, was it like, when Disney bought it, was it like, okay, we're just going to do movies, or gee, would it be great if we could get rid of theme park?
Well, to clarify, they've always wanted to do more Star Wars. The problem was that, you know, there was a rather bad falling out with George Lucas during the latter part of the Eisner years. There's kind of a famous trip that Lucas made to the parks, Disney Hollywood Studios, with his daughter, and went to go see Indiana Jones, and half the effects weren't working, and they were meeting with George at that time
So they knew he was going to be around, right?
This is what just makes me crazy. Yeah, they knew, and they were in the middle of the meetings for the podcast attraction, and George came back and was so angry about how the level of upkeep and what they were doing with the attraction, he shut down. He just walked away.
Really? And so it's like, hey, my father-in-law's coming over. Let's not clean the bathrooms.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So it took Iger coming through the door and. And in fact, it's kind of a famous story now about it's the opening of Star Wars: The Adventures Continue at Disney Hollywood Studios, and George mentions, you know, they have this breakfast before the big opening, and George is sitting down with Iger and mentions, you know, I just want to give you the heads up, I'm thinking about retiring, you know, thinking about handing the company over to the kids and that sort of thing. And it's like, whoa, okay, well, you know, more power to you. But, you know, to be honest, if you ever think about selling, you know, we're here, and we love these characters. And over the year, they had the conversation. And eventually, Lucas, again, this is what's kind of interesting with that whole story. Lucas has had such a bad time with the fandom.
He gets tons of blood.
Since Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace, yeah.
That he was talking with his kids.
Since Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah. But he was talking with his kids who legitimately did want to try it running Lucasfilm. And he's like, look, let me be honest, it's a misery. Yeah. All right? You get, you know, no matter what you do, you get nothing but crap from the fans. Tell you what, let's sell it. All right? I'll take half the money we make from it. I'll set up an education fund. You know, you guys can, you can pull a Steve Jobs. You can, you know, fund education in the rest of the world. And everyone will love you, and you'll have a big corporation to run, and you won't have to deal with crabby fans, you know, bitching at you about Jar Jar Binks. And that's
stupid podcast guys talking about Jar Jar.
Stupid podcast guys. All right. So anyway, but you know, in the background here, you know, the Imagineers had always wanted to do a follow up to you know, again, that's what's the whole point of the podcast: circle back on these worlds. Let's change out the ride film, but let's do more. Let's bump it out. But where this gets interesting for Florida is that when they opened the Star Wars: The Adventures Continues, they didn't get nearly the attendance bump. I mean, you of all people know this. You guys track the numbers.
A couple percent.
Yep.
Very, for the summer.
Mm-hmm. And they were so concerned, they actually went out and bought more TV ads and more billboards, figuring, well, people, it can't be that they're not excited about this. They just, you know, that we have to do more to advertising. And it never happened. It never moved the needle at that park the way they expected. So this is in-house. It's somewhat controversial to tell you what, let's flatten a good portion of the studio and build a Star Wars land.
So after Star Tours opened, so Potter was open at that time.
Yeah.
So did they realize, okay, maybe selling an attraction isn't enough? We need to sell a land? Is that...
Well,
did they sort of see, like, okay, you know, we can't just rebrand an attraction, call it good, and people will come?
Well, and this is where it even gets, you know, even more specific. And literally, we're talking about decisions that are being made in real time. When they opened New Fantasyland at the Magic Kingdom, they paid very close attention to what that did to their numbers as well. And in-house, they knew
So they got 8%, right?
Well, but this is the thing. You know from tracking Universal's numbers that when they opened Islands, you know, the Harry Potter at Islands...
30 to 40%, yeah.
They told themselves that, you know, that one of the reasons they justified that, you know... that $350 million investment, they were going to get a 15% bump.
You wouldn't want to be in the park on a day with a 15% bump.
But they convinced themselves of that.
No,
and
way.
So now here comes 15%. Star Wars over the hill. And it's just sort of like, Disney's board's a little hesitant to reach for the wallet yet again. I mean, you know, they're still spending money on Avatar, and they haven't seen anything... You know, there's no timeline, there's no schedule.
As far as I know, they have the barest concept of a ride, but or maybe two, but that's about it.
So now here comes Star Wars. We're going to do Star Wars Land.
Well, the thing with Star Wars too is there's a whole canon of film.
Yep.
There's a whole canon of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
But this is where it gets interesting. That the decision was made on the back of the fact that when they redid the ride film for Star Tours, and they didn't get an attendance bump. And likewise, when they looked at what they did for New Fantasyland and they didn't get the size attendant bump that they wanted, they took a cold, hard look at Potter and realized the reason that does the numbers that it does is it's the only place on the planet where you can go to have this experience. In fact, that's what's going to get interesting about Diagon Alley opening up, and more to the point, that when Potter opens at Universal Hollywood and Universal Osaka, you know, is... You know, that kind of goes away, but...
The good thing about those is they're several thousand miles apart, right?
Yep.
So, okay, fair enough.
All right, so anyway, to jump into it, they took this cold-blooded look at what happened with New Fantasyland. Let's be honest. If you wanted to go see Ariel before this, you could do the Ariel stage show, you know, over at Disney Hollywood Studios. You could do the Ariel meet and greet that used to be by the old 20K Lagoon.
Yeah.
You know...
And they could have known, too, from the from what happened at DCA, that the Ariel, the Mermaid Ride is... It provides a lot of capacity, but it's not one of those things where people are going to line up for 2 hours to sit.
No, that's it exactly. And to be honest, the only thing that really hit bigger than they expected was Beauty and the Beast, or Be Our Guest.
You know, you see that they're now for summer, they're handing out umbrellas so people don't pass out in the heat.
Yeah. Poppins is over there. What are you doing here? So anyway... Staring down the barrel of that, realizing they didn't get that bump, they turn back and look at Star Wars, and it's like, look, if we're doing Star Wars and we want people to legitimately be excited about it, we have to give them things that they've always wanted to do and that are nowhere else on the planet.
Yeah.
So this is where the plan for it gets really interesting. I mean, for example, and just to caution people, there are three separate plans right now. Only one of them will survive to make it to Disney's board of directors, and they'll vote the financing on this thing. But the one that seems to be moving forward fastest and the one that people seem most excited about is basically going to come up Hollywood Boulevard. And you know how that little side street you can turn and Hollywood and Dine is right there in Echo Lake?
Hollywood Vine, Echo Lake.
Yeah.
Right. It's behind the Clothier place, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Echo Lake goes away. All right. All of Echo Lake goes away. Indiana Jones stunt show goes away. You're basically going to have a Star Wars street that runs from...
the south part of the park.
All the way back to Star Tours.
Wow. Okay, so...
Okay.
Wow. All right.
All right, so you're talking a giant piece of territory that's going to be broken into three or four different lands.
Backlot Express?
Backlot Express.
That's a pretty big chunk of real.
They do need food service for this. Now, mind you, that where Echo Lake is going to be Mos Eisley, and in Mos Eisley, of course, is the bar,
the cantina. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they understand. But this is the problem. They've been looking at the cantina for the film, and they want this to be accurate to the movies. They want to do what Harry Potter did. And the problem is that the cantina is small.
It seats 50.
Yeah. And so...
La Cava del Mos Eisley.
So they're looking to keep Backlot Express in place as a food service location. Its theme has been moving around a lot because they want to keep Star Wars... Or excuse me, Star...
I'm throwing an idea out there. Death Star Kitchen. Every time you put your drink in the drink dispenser, it goes, da, 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 da. Oh, another idea, too. Okay. I actually saw this on Twitter, so I think it's not my idea. Mm-hmm. So you take the wheelchairs?
Yep.
You turn them into TIE fighters. Miniature TIE fighters.
I don't know if I want people screaming up behind me as I'm walking through the park. So, get out of the way.
Anyway.
All right. So,
they fill in Echo Lake. It becomes... Mos Eisley.
Right.
They got Backlot Express sort of as a food service, but what's the draw?
Well, this again, you need your Forbidden Journey, you need your Gringotts Bank. So what they're going to do is Endor and the speeder bikes. Okay. And actually, the heritage of this ride system is really kind of interesting. Tony Baxter, in fact, this is what was so fascinating about Tony when he was getting ready to leave the company. Tony used to be the most tight-lipped guy in the world. He veiled, you know, in public, behind the scenes. You know, Tony would talk and talk and talk. But in public, this is a very careful, circumspect guy. And this was, D23 had an animation celebration event last summer. And I was actually in the room with he and Eddie Sato. And they're finishing up the session about how Disney's animated features have been filtered into the parks. And Eddie, who worked on a lot of great attractions for Disney in his day, but is an outside contractor now, was talking about, you know, well, wouldn't it be great if, you know, there were a way you could race and compete against one another. And Tony literally, as the session is ending, I got to talk to you about my Tron attraction, where 50 people can, you know, race against each other simultaneously and someone actually wins the race. And
thank you all, good night.
Yeah, and it's just walking out the door seeing this. And, it's like, and you're like, wait.
Over the way, I found a treasure map.
You know,
you know, like that.
Well, but of course, because Tony had kind of fallen out of favor at Imagineering, coupled with the fact that obviously this was an attraction that was supposed to key off of Tron, which after Tron Legacy,
nobody wanted.
For a time, this ride system was actually looked at for a Wreck-It Ralph-themed attraction. It was going to do the Sugar Rush part, the racing part of the game. But then somebody in-house looked at it, and it's like, wait a minute, it's got the Tron bike setup. And it's like, speeder bikes from Return of the Jedi. And that's where we are now. That when you go to Endor, you're going to enter a room. 50 people at a time are going to be able to board speeder bikes. And what's cool about it is it's high def. You're basically in around, you know, or a 180 degree view of, you know, you're facing, your bike is facing into this environment, and there's some brush in front of you. And when you sit on the bike and hit the controls, the brush falls down, and now, because of the 180 degree CG projection around you, you're convinced you're rolling at speed through the woods of Endor, and they're going to have wind blowing in your face and scent, and it's going to be an amazing 3-minute experience that 50 people are going to have at a time. But they're going to have two domes, so they're going to get 100 people through, and you were just working the numbers for this, so it was like 2,000?
It's like 2,000 people an hour,
So that's going to be the big get, you know, you're going to be able to actually ride a speeder bike at Endor.
Through the forest.
And again, because this is kind of using the Cars Land business plan. You know, you build the big wow attraction. You have your food component, you know, or...
Lots of food components.
The Mos Eisley Cantina. You're going to need a kid-friendly ride.
Another idea, just throwing it out there.
Yep.
Okay. Who are the... what are the Luke Skywalker's aunt and uncle?
Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen. I got I got that.
That,
wow.
That was really good. That's very impressive.
Okay.
All right, so would it be tacky? Because you know how they dyed the film, right?
Oh, don't
would it,
do
would
this.
It be, would it be tacky don't to, do to this. Uncle Owen's barbecue pit? That would be wrong, right? That wouldn't be good, right?
That looks a little overdone to me. Oh, we are going to get in so much trouble. All right. Anyway, getting back to you need a kid-friendly ride. So what they're looking to do is, in kind of the...
I'm getting T-shirts made that say Uncle Owen's barbecue pit. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's how we funded the trip to Europe.
Yes, exactly.
Offending people left and right. All right. In the tradition of Dumbo, they're going to put a spinner in, only the gimmick with this one, and it's a great gimmick, is it's an X-Wing.
I've heard this.
And you can actually open the X-Wings. It's going to be very cool. However, to create room for this, what they're looking to do is moving Jedi Academy from an outdoor stage where it's always, face it, you're in Florida, it's problematic to have a show like that that can get canceled by weather. You're going to move that indoors to Sounds Dangerous, and that'll
affect... ABC Sound Studio now, Jim? Thank you.
Sorry. Sorry! I got the Out of the Nomenclature, sorry! But yeah, so just again, just picture a straight shot that goes all the way back. Now, the interesting thing is, in order to sell this, because this is going to be in the Harry Potter style, a real land, a real place, not a movie set. It means, for example, you're going to see all of that movie propping. I mean, like the Ewok village and the walker that, when you're looking at them from the back, are clearly painted to look like props and have actually numbers. Those are going to be replaced with... They're going to do a full-sized walker.
Really?
Yeah.
A full-sized Ewok walker.
Yeah. And,
wow.
And, in fact, there's at least...
Well, that'll be the park icon. Jesus, that'll
Yeah, well, but that's the thing. They just figure, if you're going to do... If we're going to do this, we have to do this full-size scale, you know, right now. Again, the problem with doing this, and again, to caution, there are two other plans.
Right.
And in at least one version of this plan, they push... back toward Muppets and keep Echo Lake in place.
Yeah, so the two versions of the blueprint I've seen is essentially starting where Hollywood and Vine is,
right,
working all the way back to Star Tours. The other one is from Star Tours all the way back to the, I guess, what is it, the west side of the park.
Yep.
Essentially taking out LMA, Light Splatter Action, everything else.
And the interesting thing is...
That would suck people to that back part of the park, but then they'd just stay there.
Well, and the argument... And the interesting thing is, one of the arguments in-house about why Star Tours, The Adventures Continue, didn't spin the odometer the way it should have, is it's buried at the back of the park. All right, where if you go to Disneyland, I mean, you walk up the main street and you...
Make
it
right.
And it's right there.
It's right there.
You do all that business. So it's like, look, if we're going to put...
Well, not only that, they've actually got the Astro Orbiter right in the front there to spin, to make to pull people over that way, that sort of kinetic look,
Yeah, so...
Oh, so they'll probably put the spinner in the front then, too. Okay.
Well, it's just one of these things. They believe that people, if they're going to do it, they're going to spend this money, people have to see this immediately. It can't be a walk to the back of the park to find...
So how are they going to fit the theme of Hollywood Boulevard with Endor? I mean, we're literally within, like, 20 yards of each other. That's going
to
be...
Welcome to the conversation. Yeah. All right, you know, there is...
If you go, like, Hollywood Boulevard, California Desert, Endor...
Well, it gets worse than that, because they want to keep... Because they do a very good business with their Disney Playhouse breakfast at Hollywood and Vine.
Oh, and also a 50s Primetime Cafe,
Yeah, so it's one of these things where it's like, we want to protect this.
The lounge, too. I mean, the bar business that TuneIn Lounge does is probably...
So you understand the problem now. It's one of these things where...
Oh, you know, Food and Bev is like, you know, there's no way I'm hitting my numbers in the studios if you're taking away...
So it's trying to...
That's a lot of blue milk you have to sell.
No, that's it exactly. So it's how do you position this?
Wow, that's a challenge, too.
Yeah, so...
What about... we talked about this a little bit earlier. You touched on it, and I want to go back to it. Mm-hmm. One of the great things about the walk-around scenes in the Star Wars movies is you see all these different characters.
Yep.
How are they going to replicate, you know, the 7-foot-tall Wookiee and all the different aliens? Because just from a practical perspective, that's a lot of people to have walk around. There are many more interesting characters in Star Wars than in the Disney animated films walking around the Magic Kingdom. I mean, you've got maybe 20 or 30 characters walking around, but you're going to probably need at least that many in the Star Wars land to make it feel like an actual space.
Oh, absolutely. And it gets better, because one of the things the Imagineers want to do is they want to be able to have people walk through who are Jedis and literally spontaneously do things like gesture, and large heavy objects will rise up or doors will open. And it's a level of propping and commitment to effects that are really hard to maintain. And but again, the notion is if you're hanging in the streets of Mos Eisley, Jawas will walk by. And
it pretty much has to happen. But
and,
yeah.
You know, and you'll have, you know, you'll have sort of the street shows of, you know, the stormtroopers stopping people in the street and quizzing them and all that. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Have you seen these droids?
Yes, that's exactly. That's it exactly. You know, and. But again, it's because of what happened with the investment on Magic Kingdom. There's a certain, with the new Fantasyland, and the argument in-house there is like, look, it's not officially done yet. All right, wait till our, you know, Princess Fairy Tale Hall is open. Wait till, you know, and then you'll see your numbers. Then you'll see what you're expecting. So, look, if you're going to the D23 Expo in August, you're going to hear about this in a big way. And hopefully by then they will settle on the one plan.
The one true plan, yeah.
Okay, but just remember that anybody who went to the D23 Expo in 2009 remembers when we saw the one true plan for New Fantasyland then. All right, that wasn't what got built.
Yeah.
So this is a fluid situation. But they know they have to do something, because
if they put in the studios and they got a 30% bump on the studios,
yep,
that would bring it up from about 9 million to about 12 million. That's a pretty big jump for that park too.
Yep. And at the same time, you're looking at you see what they've been doing infrastructure wise, whether it's working on parking or talking about example the entrance coming off of Buena Vista.
I think they actually open up that side entrance every once in a while just to see what would happen if they had to take out part of the parking lot.
Yep.
So so after D23, what's sort of the timeline for developing?
Let's put it this way: if they get
before or after Avatar,
this is well before Avatar. In fact, Avatar. The interesting thing is that they can start site clearing for Avatar probably later this year. But frankly, given that they've got the new Star Wars movie coming out in 2016.
They're doing one every other year, right? Yeah. So they got, so 2015 or
2016?
2015, yeah. And then 17 and 19. So.
Yeah. In fact, the only thing that could possibly trip this up at this point, and this is where it really does get interesting, is there's an argument in-house where, why are we building old Star Wars land? We are about to invest in new Star Wars land. Wouldn't it make sense to at least keep one expansion pad open? For example,
one of the next three movies.
Yeah, and so that's
not a bad idea.
And that's the interesting thing is that's what they kind of did with Backlot Express. It's like, okay, let's just let's maybe strip the props out of it that are there now and put in a lot of Star Wars. Make it a Star Wars museum. And in the event that we hit upon something big, like say, the pod racers, we come across something that people absolutely must see replicated in the theme park, we have a spot right in the center of the park.
We could do it. The good thing about that too, though, is that about where they're putting it. If they do put it there, they could actually take out a large chunk of the parking lot and go back that way. They could go, what is that, east?
Yeah,
they could do that too. So they got some. And then don't forget across the road to the south. If they ever wanted to completely reroute traffic, they could actually go that way. That would be a much better investment.
That's it exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a 50-year plan for every park that involves some repositioning. And again, the whole notion is, will people even travel to the parks the way that we do now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. The other thing to keep in mind here is that the studio now has some sacred cows, all right?
Oh, really?
For example, the Osborne Lights, all right?
Yeah, you can't get rid of them.
And that's the whole notion. Everyone's like, you could tear down the streets of America. It's like hell you could tear down the streets of America.
Just the after-hours parties that they get every night. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that thing gets bought out every couple nights.
It does. That coupled with the fact that the tens of thousands of people who consider that now a holiday tradition to go there. So it's like,
oh my God, it's insane. It's like New Year's Eve every night in that little area.
But conversely, though, on the other hand, I don't know if you heard just in the last week to 10 days, they actually did a test at the New Amsterdam Theater in New York for a Muppets a live stage show featuring the Muppets, but as Muppets as puppets, real puppets.
Real Muppets.
Yeah, it's Alex Tim.
I mean, they're real, but
you get the idea. But yeah. But Alex Timber, the director of Peter and the Neverland,
Jake and the Neverland?
No, damn it, I'm getting the name of it wrong.
Blues.
The show we saw in New York, the
Peter and the Star
Catchers. Okay. They did a 15-minute long cutting, and
it's Kermit and the Star Catchers. Is
that it? it's able translating these characters to the stage. And the interesting thing is that if Disney Theatrical takes these characters and brings them to New York to do something like that, they would not be upset if the attraction to the park went away, because they're going to try to get $100 to $120 a ticket to have people come see the stage show.
Oh, so they don't want to, I can just go see the Muppets in Walt Disney World.
So, you know, then if that's the case.
Well, then it's just Osborne. You could relocate that to Backlot or something.
Yeah, you suddenly end up, you have another area you can move into. And, you know, that in fact, when they did at least one test for Mos Eisley, where they were going to take advantage of the back tight little back alleyways that led to Mama Melrose.
Mm-hmm. And
and you know, one iteration of this has the bay that the full size Millennium Falcon's in for a photo op, and
wow.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff they want to try to do, but again, three plans. Only one of them is going to survive, and it's Disney's board of directors that's a little gun-shy after all that money on New Fantasyland. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out.
Hmm. All right, so the next big announcement then is D23
in August? D23, get your tickets and be in the Anaheim Convention Center, the big hall. That's where they're going to do it, and you know, anticipate a lot of Stormtroopers. In fact, that's the interesting thing, that we're just a couple days now recording after the licensing show in Las Vegas, and that was where Disney announced, you know, to all of the licensees and all the plans, by the way, we own Star Wars now, and had this amazing parade of Stormtroopers come into, you know, the Mandalay Bay Convention Center. It's like, to nail home the point, you will buy our T-shirts, you will make our toys.
Bob Iger going, your faith in our company, in fact, your lack of faith in our company, disturbing.
So, no, they are...
I find your faith in our merchandise... Lack of faith in our mission is disturbing. Yeah, okay. Right.
But you know that they're not kidding around, and in fact, that's honestly one of the things I kind of feel bad about for Avatar, because there's just a belief in house. It's like, look, we have Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, why are we busting our butts to try to make James Cameron happen? Would we have the?
We can control our destiny with this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so
I totally get it. If they didn't do Avatar, I'd be absolutely fine with it.
Okay, well,
but they need something for this, for Animal Kingdom, though, or it's
they
gonna
do.
Drop down. But,
they do. They
but,
do.
But just because they need something doesn't mean that they need that. So.
Yeah. So.
Cool. All right. So August is the next thing. All right, Jim. Anything? Any last closing words?
No. Just again, just watch for August, and again, be ready for this plan to change.
Sure will. So. All right. Well, thanks very much, Jim. So for Jim, this is Len. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide to Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Do us a favor, please rate us on iTunes and let us know what other shows you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.